Hey, Culture and Conversations family. I'm your host, Jameson Smallwood, and I'm about to make you guys part of the conversation. Hey guys, thank you for downloading. Thank you guys for subscribing to, and thank you for sharing Culture and Conversations. Up next on Culture and Conversations, I have a fascinating conversation with a beekeeper who helped me out recently dealing with a honeybee hive that had developed in my home. His name is Ed Parsons, and Ed is going to come on to Culture and Conversations and chat with us about the life of bees. Up next on Culture and Conversations. Hey, Culture and Conversations family. Yes, this is Culture and Conversations. It has been a very busy time for me. You guys have probably noticed that I haven't published an episode in a couple of weeks, and it was probably the hardest time to sit down and actually do an episode. There's just been a lot going on personally with my transition into my new home. There has been a lot going on with work, just trying to get settled into a new opportunity, a new client that I have in my day job. And I've just been lazy as well. So there has been a lot going on with me, and I'm trying to definitely stay focused on producing Culture and Conversations. Let me give you an update on the show just so that you can understand kind of what we've got going on. There's a lot that's been happening, though, with hashtag the group chat. Culture and Conversations presents hashtag the group chat over on Facebook and also on YouTube. We're still giving you a great weekly live stream as we have an opportunity to do so. Given our schedules, Brandy and Ray are great co-hosts, and we are building a great show there. And I'm just really fortunate to have them as partners in crime as we produce a live stream that I think is one of the best podcast experiences and watching experiences that you're going to get from homegrown media like what we're doing as a podcast. So be sure to go over to our Facebook group, Culture and Conversations Presents, hashtag the group chat, and join the group. And also over on Facebook, I'm sorry, not Facebook, on YouTube, we need you to go over to Culture and Conversations and subscribe to our YouTube channel because we're trying to grow that community as well. We have a lot other things happening as well with the show. We are, you know, obviously trying to make a push to grow our community on social media, but we want to do it organically where, you know, people who actually care about the show are interfacing and interacting with us. And so we're going to do the best we can to continue to give you content over there. So if you want to be a part of our discussion and help contribute to what we talk about on shows and to interact with the show and the community around the show, then that's the place to do it, is over on Facebook. And that is going to be, that's going to be Culture and Conversations Presents, hashtag the group chat. We've sort of gotten away from our Facebook page, even though we're never going to get rid of it, obviously, because it's what hosts the Facebook group. But the page is for just the platform, really, for going live and using that to reach our community. And we're almost at 1,000 members, over on the page in terms of followers, I should say. And it's amazing to see the response and the growth that our community has had and some of the things we've done to try to build the community. But we want you to make sure that you're making yourself known to us through the social media assets and continuing to support the show and coming on board. And we appreciate the support. Definitely. I know Brandy and Ray does as well. Brandy and Ray do as well. Okay. They do as well. So next on Culture and Conversations, I want to give you guys this great conversation that I had with a very interesting person that I've never needed the services of before until recently. Part of what I've been doing as I've moved into my new home is I've been doing some minor renovations and some minor repairs and upgrades. And lo and behold, one day when I was talking to one of the subcontractors who was coming out to give me a quote, we discovered that there was a honeybee hive that had developed in the front of my home. And what ensued next, and what continues to ensue to some degree, is this interesting and very fascinating experience where I have to manage these honeybees. And so I had a choice to make. I had a choice of doing just an extermination of the bees, but I decided to do a humane honeybee removal because I'm trying to be mindful of the honeybee population. And so as a result, I reached out to a couple of beekeepers in our area, and they all recommended me that I should go and talk to Ed Parsons. And Ed is going to come on next on Culture and Conversations and share his experience keeping bees and talk a lot about the honeybee populations and just what goes on in the secret life of bees. Up next on Culture and Conversations, my conversation with Ed Parsons. Hey, Culture and Conversations family. I have on the phone a person who helped me out of a very sweet and sticky situation. He is Ed Parsons, and Ed is a, I would call you a beekeeper, Ed, but you're definitely a bee removal expert. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do both beekeeping and a bee removal. They kind of go hand in hand. If you're removing bees from people's houses, you consequently end up with a lot of bees. So I currently have about 25 hives at my house, and I'm continually expanding and giving away bees to friends. And so my life is surrounded by those little buggers.
And I guess I got a good question for you, man. What started you working with bees, and what started your interest in bees?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I was, you know, I grew up on a farm in New England, and I remember as a kid, there was a surveyor that was surveying some property near our farm, and he came back and told my father that, hey, there's a beehive in a tree over here. And I remember I was probably, I don't know, 8 or 9 years old. And at the time, my dad went out there and put on his cowboy hat, had to put whatever screen he could on in his winter jacket. And it was in the fall of the year, so it wasn't cold. And I remember him cutting the tree down and cutting a big window out and taking a whole bunch of honey. And he left them some, hoping the bees would make it through the winter. And unfortunately, they didn't. But as a result of that, my dad got a little bit of an interest in beekeeping. And I remember to go into bee club meetings as a kid for a while. And then it really fell by the wayside for, gosh, probably 40 years. And then I moved here, somehow I ended up here in Georgia back in 96. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I had a friend come to my house, and I live out in the country a little bit. And he said, hey, can I keep bees at your house? I said, sure. So I proceeded to watch him kill his bees over the next 2 years in a row. He was just a beginner beekeeper. And so I said, I've got to figure this out. There's got to be a way to keep these things alive. And really, it just started me down the path of, you know, just learning about bees and trying to figure out how to keep them alive and how to propagate them and, you know, what kind of care needs they have, and just feeling comfortable working around bees and being able to understand, you know, what gets them angry and what makes them happy, and, you know, just kind of day-to-day care of bees. And once you understand those things, the fear that comes with being surrounded by 1,000 bees buzzing around your head kind of goes away. You know, I've gotten to the point now where, you know, I handle bees with my bare hands a lot, and I'm just not as fearful, and it just kind of works out.
Yeah, I was amazed when I saw you help me. And for the listeners, just so people can understand how we cross paths, I had a contractor come out to my house who was giving me a quote. And all of a sudden, I heard him call me outside, and he said, hey, Jameson, I want to show you something going on with your house. And he points up to my second story window, and he's like, hey, you have a bee. Looks like you have a beehive that's developed in your house. And so, you know, I'm thinking to myself, great, you know, what else do I need to deal with when moving into this house? And so what happened was, can you hear me, can't you, Ed?
Oh, yeah.
Can you hear me now, Ed?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay. I'm going to mute you out in the background while I talk a little bit so that we don't pick up any road noise by accident. So okay. Let me pick up where I was at. So I was outside, called outside by a contractor, and he was pointing to my house and he said, "Hey man, take a look at this." And he showed me this beehive that apparently was inside my house. And I said, "Oh great. You know, what else can possibly go wrong with me moving into this house?" And I look up to my second story window, and sure enough, there are a few bees popping in and out of this little hole that's up by my second story window. And I'm thinking to myself, "Oh, okay. It's only a few bees, you know. I know there's probably a few more, you know, somewhere up there, but it doesn't look like it's that many." And so this is when I decided to call Ed, and I said, "Hey Ed, I've got these bees." And you came over, and when you broke open the piece of facial board on the front of my house where the bees were hiding at, you told me literally that you thought by your estimation that there were about 5,000 bees swarming around in that hive.
Yeah, and honestly, that's not a particularly big one. I mean, they get a lot bigger. You know, a full-size hive in my apiary can have 60,000 bees in it at this time of year.
Wow.
You know, so it is a little bit intimidating when you first get exposure to that. And, you know, I remember when I first started beekeeping on how, you know, intimidating it was to have, you know, thousands of bees flying around you. And you know, it takes a bit of time to get used to that. And, but once you get over it, you're, you know, it's not a big deal anymore. So, yeah, so you had, I would consider, you know, kind of a medium size, hive in there, colony of bees in there. And, you know, I guess part of this, I think one of the things I hope to get out of this call is to share with your listeners is that, you know, the honeybees have a very important part in our society. You know, 1/3 of our vegetables that we eat require pollination.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's very important. I mean, you wouldn't have apples and peaches and pears, and you wouldn't have strawberries and watermelons and all kinds of vine fruits, that pumpkins and squash and cucumbers. And, you know, there's a lot of vegetables that require pollination. So that's really what the role of honeybees is. People think, well, they're there to make honey. Well, you know, honey is great. I love honey. I do eat a lot of it, but on the other hand, the real important role is pollination. So, you know, we've got this passion for trying to, you know, keep these pollinators alive and keep them going. Just to kind of give you an idea of the impact of honeybees in the U.S., there's currently about 2 million hives in the U.S. And oddly enough, a lot of them are, you know, probably, I don't know, 80-90% of them are owned by commercial beekeepers. They own thousands of them.
Okay.
You know? And then there's sideline guys, they call them sideliners like me, that have, you know, 20 to 50 hives or something. And then there's the hobbyist. And really the hobbyist side of things is really, you know, it's really growing. It's becoming kind of vogue to, you know, to raise honeybees now. So there's a lot of backyard people that have them. And so what happens is this time of year, the honeybee population is really exploding. You know, the queen's coming out of the winter and she's starting to lay. She'll produce about 1,500 babies a day.
Wow.
She'll lay that many eggs a day. So you can imagine how many bees there are at that kind of volume. And the average honeybee will only live 45 days in the summer, in spring and summer, because they literally work themselves to death. They're born with one mission, and that's to grow up, take care of the hive, and eventually go out and forage for the hive, make honey, and they work themselves to death, and in 45 days, they're gone.
Oh, wow.
So it's an interesting dynamic on how they do things. So this time of year, when the populations are exploding, there's this thing called swarming, and people have heard about bee swarms. And so what happens is the worker bees actually decide that, hey, we're crowded in here, we're leaving. So they put the queen on a diet, and they create these cells. They're called queen cells, and she will lay eggs inside of there. And in 9 days, they cap over those cells, And after between day nine and day 16, that queen is preparing to leave with about half of her employees. So as a beekeeper, we don't want that, because we don't want half of our employees flying off and going living in Jameson's house or living in a tree somewhere. We want them in our hives producing honey and pollinating. So Jameson you were a victim of somebody had a beehive somewhere and they swarmed off and they went into the soffit of your house and said, "Ooh, this is a great place to live." And they moved in and started drawing comb and they were setting up house and they were preparing to be there for the year.
Oh, wow. And
so that's kind of how the whole bee removal thing comes about. It's as a result of bees swarming out of their hives, wherever they're kept, and finding new houses to live in. And that's what happens.
So I mean, I think that's an interesting question there, Ed. So I'm thinking that, you know, okay, I just had this one solitary queen who flew off and landed in that little spot in my house and started making you know, a comb and a hive. But what you're saying is that it was just a swarm where she left another spot and brought some workers with her. And like you said, they set up shop.
Yeah, and actually, she's not the one that decides where they live. There's a guy, Tom Seeley, who recently retired from Cornell University, and he is a bee behavioralist, and he's written extensively about this. There's a book out there called Honeybee Democracy, and how the bees go about deciding where their next home is. So what happens is when the queen leaves with, you know, thousands of other bees, and they'll go land on a bush, or they'll land on a next side of a building. Sometimes they land on cars that are parked, and they've been in all kinds of funny places. But what they do is they typically only stay there for a few days. And within that cluster of bees that have swarmed off, there are what they call scout bees. They're kind of like the senior citizens of the group. They're generally the older bees, and they will go out searching for a new home. And they go through this democratic process where they'll find a potential home and they'll come back into the cluster, and they do this dance. They call it the waggle dance. And they indicate what direction and how far away their new home is. And then they go through this process of several scout bees will say, "Well, come check mine out." And another one says, "Well, come check mine out." And then before you know it, they've got a lot of bees checking out one particular house or two particular houses. And then at some point they cast a vote and they say, "This is where we're going." And they'll all leave that bush or that tree that they're hanging on, and they all collectively fly off as a group, and they go land on the side of a house and move in through this little hole. So it's really quite fascinating. It's not the queen that decides where they go. It's actually the workers. They're the ones that hold the vote.
Mm.
So it really is a democracy in the honeybee world.
Wow. And, you know, one of the things about bees that's fascinating to me too is, so when this swarm happens, the queen, she flies off and she takes half the workers with her. So
right.
Does she leave behind like another queen to be? No pun intended.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. So what they'll do is they'll create several what they call queen cells. And they're really like the size of a peanut. You know, they're hanging off the bottom one of these frames inside a hive. And interestingly enough, if you think about all those queen cells, they're all sisters, right? Each one of them is the other sister. So what happens is, the first daughter to emerge goes around and kills all her sisters. Because in the honeybee world, there can only be one queen. And so it's kind of a brutal fact of nature, but, you know, the first to emerge will go around and kill her sisters. She becomes the next queen, and what happens, you know, she's obviously born a virgin. She will stick around for about a week inside the hive, and then she goes off, and then she mates. And so male bees are called drones. And in a hive, there's always a bunch of drones. And it's interesting because in the bee world, males have very little role to do other than to propagate. And the reality is so they have like bachelor groups that go hang out in these, they call them drone congregation areas. And the queen, the Virgin Queen, will go fly out and find one of these, and she will mate with several of the male bees, and she goes back to the hive, and she will, and if she never swarms, she will never leave the hive again. So she mates once in her life, and that's it. She has a sac inside her body called the spermatheca, and she stores up enough sperm to last her entire life. So from then forward, all the babies she produces from that one mating. And she will live 2 or 3 years, and eventually she runs out of sperm, and then the hive decides, hey, she's weak and she's old, and they're the ones that kick her out of the hive shortly after she creates the next generation. So it's quite fascinating how brutal the bee world is. But that's kind of what happens is she'll leave behind a bunch of daughters, and then when she goes off in a swarm, she's going to go start a hive somewhere else, and her daughters will pick off right where she left.
And then if she's a weak queen, then the colony will kill her off. And
that's right.
And then whatever daughters she left behind in her last batch, one of those will become the new queen.
That's right. Yeah, before they kill her off, they're going to create queen cells, and she will lay eggs in those queen cells. And the difference between a worker and a queen cell is just the amount of food that is given to them. Bees produce this food called royal jelly, and that is like baby food, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bees that get a lot of royal jelly, those are the ones that develop into queens, providing they're in the big cells that can hold the queen, because the queen is almost twice the size of a normal bee. She's got a great big long abdomen on her, so she needs a little bigger place to grow as she's developing from an egg to a larva to a pupa and then emerging. So, it's neat how Mother Nature is accommodated for that. And, you know, whenever she's on her way out, she's always going to replace herself before she goes.
Wow. You talked about, you know, the importance of the honeybee and just how the honeybee helps with the population of vegetables and fruits that we eat in our food chain. And this leads me to the question that I want to kind of highlight a little bit here too, Ed, is, you know, this question is fairly straightforward, but I think it's important to highlight because, for instance, when I had discovered my beehive, I had a couple of different options, right? I could have went to Home Depot and got a can of some kind of wasp or bee spray and, you know, tried my best to spray them to death and kill them, you know, by hand. Or, you know, I could have called an exterminator, had an exterminator come out here and put on a suit and spray some stuff up there and kill them. But let's talk about the difference between what I would call humane bee removal and then extermination.
Absolutely.
So extermination is when we kill them, but humane bee removal is what you do.
Yeah. So, the problem with extermination of honeybees in a house is you never really know how much is developed inside the house. So if you've got a hive, like I did an extraction on Saturday where if you were to look from the outside, it looked like just a little bit of comb in the eave of this garage. And honestly, I didn't think it was that big a deal. But then when I used my heat-sensitive infrared camera, I was able to look at it from another side and realize it was a massive hive. I took out 10 gallons of comb and honey out of that space. So you can imagine, if you would have killed the bees, you would have left probably a 4 gallon, 4 gallons of dead bees in there, and you would have left about 10 gallons of honey and comb that would have eventually just rotted. You know, it doesn't last there forever. So, you really can't just leave it in the wall. I mean, it would be pretty disgusting before too long, particularly if they've got a lot of honey. So you just don't know, when you've got a bee problem, you just don't know if it's, hey, they just moved in and there's no comb, there's no honey to worry about. Or they could have been there. They could be the second or third generation of bees that have moved in and died off. Well, see, that, there's another important thing you realize is that there really aren't any wild honeybees per se anymore. There used to be, you know, 30 years ago, there were bees could survive for a very long time, but the whole environment has changed because now there's this thing called Varroa mites. And some people have heard of colony collapse disorder and, you know, all the bees are dying off. Well, the colony collapse disorder was kind of a broad description of we got a lot of bees dying and we don't know why. And what happened is there's this thing called Varroa mites that came over from Asia, and they're these little mites that attach to the back of the bees. They get inside the hives. They reproduce inside the brood of the babies that are being developed, and they don't necessarily kill the bees off. What they do is they make them very sick, and then they're susceptible to a host of different viruses that kill them. So that's why you can't say it's just one thing that kills them. However, what triggers it all is the Varroa mites. So what happens is when these bees swarm off out of somebody's house, out of a hive and into somebody's house, they're going to die. You know, it's just a matter of when. They might last a year. They might last 2 years. You just don't know. But they're eventually going to die. So bees need to be managed. As a beekeeper, I treat my bees probably 3 times a year for Varroa mites, and they do wonderfully. You know, it's like imagine having an infection and not having penicillin available. You know, in the old days, you just died of the infection. Now it's very simple to just treat with penicillin and your infection goes away. So it's the same thing with the bees. If you treat your bees for the Varroa mites, you can control that problem and your bees can live a great healthy life. So, you know, it's important for these hives, there are these colonies of bees to be managed by people. So when you deal with bee removal guys, all of them are beekeepers at some level. And whether they use them themselves or they donate them to other organizations, I donate hives to, there's a veterans organization called Docs Healing Hives where they train or teach veterans how to become beekeepers. And they give them a hive to get started with it. And, you know, it's kind of a good thing to, you know, treat people that maybe are having some issues with post-traumatic stress syndrome and things like that. Give them other hobbies to take their mind off from some of the things they're dealing with. So, you know, there's lots of options to get rid of bees. There's lots of people that want them. And so that's what I do is if I don't need any more, and honestly, I really don't. I've got 25 hives and that's more than enough for me. I just donate them to different folks that I think need or want them.
Yeah, I think that's a great highlight there. You know, essentially with humane bee removal, you give bees a chance to continue to do the work that they're doing, naturally helping our food chain, helping pollinate. I didn't know that about the fact that there really are no more wild bees. I guess, Ed, just kind of an aside question, do you ever see a day where there are wild populations of honeybees again? Is this mite problem, this Varroa mite problem, too severe for them to naturally be on their own without the human interaction and intervention?
You know, that's a great question. There are, if you think about resistance to Varroa mites, there's a number of different things you can do. Obviously, we're using, you know, some level of treatment, chemicals or some. I actually use a natural product called oxalic acid, which people commonly can find it at Home Depot. It's called oxalic acid, and it's a powder. And what I do is I vaporize it within the hives, and I don't want to breathe it in. I wear a gas mask when I'm doing it. But ironically, it no effect on the bees whatsoever, but it just knocks the mites dead. The mites cannot tolerate it at all. So it's a very cheap and quick treatment. You know, it's like going to the doctor and getting a antibiotic or something. You know, it's very quick and easy to do. But as far as developing a resistance or a defense against Varroa mites, there are a number of different things. There are bees that they're breeding that have different behaviors. There's like this cleaning behavior where they clean each other, and they can see a mite on their sister, and they'll go over there and they'll grab the mite and they'll turn it upside down and they chew their legs off. And they call those the ankle biters, because once the mites have their legs chewed off, obviously they can't walk very far. So, and then there's other ones that have other hygienic behavior where if they smell Varroa mite larvae within the cells of their own sisters, that they will actually terminate that cell. Not only it kills the developing bee larvae, but it also kills the mites that are within it. So there's, I think Mother Nature has a way of fixing the problems. You know, the bees that know how to, that have this hygienic behavior, eventually they end up surviving. You know, Darwin's rule of you know, natural selection. The bees that know how to deal with the varroas more effectively, they will become the honeybee of tomorrow.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, that is an interesting development, you know, with this mite problem, because I didn't know. I mean, I'm really fascinated by this conversation. This has been a great conversation. I didn't know any of this, so I'm just sitting back, just, you know, really geeking out about bees. And I'm so glad I didn't kill them. I'm so glad I just, you know, I went about trying to remove them. And let's talk about your process a little bit, so people can have an idea about exactly what a humane bee removal would look like if they were to reach out to you and say, hey, and I've got this bee problem and I want help with it. So, you know, you showed up to my house and you had your beekeeper suit on and you had an interesting device. It looked like a shop vac, but it wasn't quite a shop vac. What is that vacuum cleaner and how do you use it to remove the bees?
Sure. Yeah. So what it is, it's essentially a bee vacuum. What I do is, I've got a 7-gallon bucket and I've got a shop vac, what do they call it? A bucket head, I believe, that you put on a 5-gallon bucket. And inside that 7-gallon bucket, I've created a cage. And it's the cage that I keep the bees in. So I have a pool hose that I plug into the side of the bucket so that when I'm sucking up the bees with the hose, they go into the cage. They don't go through the vacuum. The vacuum, you know, is up top. So I keep them in this cage. So I will basically suck up all the bees in the hive. And as I'm going along, I'll also cut out the pieces of comb. And I do try to save that as well, because the comb has developing larvae on it. And I will take that and I'll hang that in frames and I'll put that into the hive where I put these bees. So, you know, they don't lose all their babies. There's always some mortality when you're doing a removal, but, you know, if I'm good at it and I got good access to the comb, I can do a pretty good job of salvaging it. And then I'll suck up all the bees, I'll remove all the comb. And then the most important thing about this whole remediation is that I'll fill the hole with insulation, because bees need 5 to 10 gallons of open space in order to move in. So as long as the open space is insulated, you know, and I just take regular pink insulation and I'll just stuff it in there and fill up the whole hole, the bees won't come back because it doesn't meet the criteria of having 5 to 10 gallons of open space. They may come in and check it out, look around and say, no, there's not enough room for us. And then they leave. So, you know, that's why we can guarantee these bees will never come back to the spot, because there is no spot for them to come back to. So, you know, one thing to be aware of is that quite often, you know, soffits, which are those little areas under your eave of your house, like where the eave hangs over the outside of the house.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got rotten wood up there, that's a golden opportunity for bees to move in, because most soffits are not insulated. And those are just wonderful places for bees to move in. So it's important as a homeowner to just stay on top of that. If you see your fascia boards, which are those boards right below the shingles, if they're starting to get rotten, it's a really good idea to just get them replaced. Yeah. You know, it'll cost you, you know, if you do it yourself, you could probably repair that for, you know, under $50. And, you know, if you got to go through a bee removal, it's going to be 10 or 15 times that. So, it's, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, as they say. So, you know, maintaining your house is really important. If you see a lot of cracks and stuff, you can use caulking to seal that up on the outside. And, you know, you can probably get a contractor to come seal your whole house for, you know, a couple hundred dollars. And you probably only have to do that, you know, once every 10 years or something.
No, that's so true.
Yeah, so it's a good idea to stay up on the maintenance of your house so you'll avoid that problem.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, you know, just some of the common places that they intrude. But I mean, the soffit that you fixed at my house, it looks like a B box. If you really look at it, it looks like a B box when you see the shape of it and the size of it. And like you were saying, the dimensions and the volume that's allowed, that allows bees into it. So it makes a perfect home for them to come in and set up shop, you know?
Right. Right. And, you know, ignoring the problem does not make it go away. It only gets worse, too. I went to a house about a week ago or so, and they had said, yeah, the bees have been in here for a couple of years. And I'm thinking, a couple of years, this could be a doozy. I swear they must have had, I don't know, at least 8 feet of comb between two studs or two, you know, two of the rafters. There were 2x6s, and at least 8 feet of that was completely filled with comb.
Wow!
And it was huge. They had obviously been in there quite a while, and I can kind of tell how many years they've been just basically from the color of the comb. You know, comb is when it's first made, it's like as white as can be. It's beautiful, and over time, then it starts to turn yellow, and then it starts to turn a little light brown, and then, you know, you look at 2 or 3 year old comb and it's almost black.
Okay.
And the funny thing is I remember asking somebody about, you know, why is it black? And the reality is, if you think about it, bees' feet are very dirty. And if they're walking over this comb for years, just like our house, if we didn't wash our floor would be very dirty after 2 or 3 years. So that's why, you know, with old comb, it really doesn't have any value for anything. We tend to throw that stuff away. But the newer comb, you know, we can always salvage the larvae and the eggs. And I even pull out, you know, if there's big pieces of honey in there, I'll even cut that out and I'll take that home. I enjoy cut comb honey too.
Man,
that's
amazing. Yeah. It's just a lot there, man, with the bees. I'm fascinated. And that's the reason I reached out to you and I said, hey, I don't know if you know this about me, but I have a podcast and I would love to have you on, and you were agreeable to come on and share your story. So, you know, I guess.
Well, I'm glad you're giving me the opportunity to talk a little bit about them, because, you know, you don't have to be fearful of them. You know, if you do have bees in your house, it's not like you have to remove them today or tomorrow or next week. But just imagine, as long as you wait, it's only getting worse and it's not going to go away. So there's always going to be, even if the bees die off, you've still got comb in there, and you still got an opportunity for more bees to move in, because, you know, if the bees were to die off, the scent of their comb is still there, and bees can smell that. They're attracted to it. So, you know, you do have to deal with it eventually. So, you know, it is important to just not ignore it. You got to deal with it at some point. Here's something that's really, and this is one thing I want your listeners to remember, is that, you know, Facebook is a wonderful thing, in terms of serving the community. Anywhere you live, all you have to search for is beekeepers in whatever county you live in. And there will be a number of people on there, and there's always folks that can share information. The beekeeper community, they're very helpful, and there are always folks out there. They know who the bee removal people are. And, you know, a lot of times if you just find swarms, beekeeper clubs, they love swarms. It's like free bees, you know, because for us to buy a hive of bees, you know, it costs us probably $150 if we were to go out on the market to buy bees. So every time we collect a swarm, it's like, hey, there's $150 for free. So if you see a swarm of bees, just go to Facebook and search on Beekeepers Group, and just message them and say, hey, there's a swarm at such and such address, and I'll tell you, it'll be a race to get there for the beekeepers. So.
Well, Well, I'm going to say this, though, Ed, and I will say this for your service and other beekeepers. You guys do such invaluable work for us in the community as well as our food supply chain that, you know, if you find a swarm of bees within a structure in your home or on your property that's somewhere difficult to access and it's hard for the beekeeper to remove the bees, you should pay them whatever the beekeeper asks you to pay them because, you know, we can't do it ourselves as homeowners, go and remove the bees in a sensible fashion unless we're totally going to decimate the space. And so, I mean, I really think it's really important to support people such as yourself, Ed, who are going in the community and doing this kind of work because it's somewhat thankless, but at the same time, it does help the community in a much deeper way because it, you know, the community eats the vegetables that these bees pollinate, and as well as we enjoy the honey and all the other benefits that come from honeybees. Sure. You know, there's some, I never forget that. I did see something once years ago where I can't remember what they were treating, but they were treating some medical condition using bee stings to.
Yeah. It's called apitherapy. Yeah. They'll the poison or the venom, is actually, effective in like for inflammation and things like that. It makes you swell up, but then later on, I guess the results of it are better. You know, I've gotten to the point where I get stung so much that it just doesn't bother me anymore. It might be painful for 5 or 10 minutes, but when I first started, gosh, I remember getting a sting on the side of my face, right next to my eye. My eye swelled shut for 3 days.
Man.
So, you know, if you folks are thinking about trying to do a bee removal on your own, just don't bother. It's simply not worth it. I mean, the pain of just one sting is bad enough. You can imagine getting stung, you know, 10 or 20 times when you're doing it. You just don't have the resistance to the venom that they have. So it's honestly, it's just not worth it. If you're going to go there and kill them, you know, you still got the problem of all that stuff in your walls. You don't want that stuff in your walls forever. You know, it not only attracts other insects in there and you don't want that rotten stuff in your walls. So, you know, sometimes you got to bite the bullet. You know, people have to realize that, you know, professional beekeeper guys and bee removal guys, it's no different than an electrician or a plumber. You know, these guys do that work for money.
Exactly.
You know, and they have to support themselves to do it. I had a client that expected me to go do a removal for them a couple of weeks ago. They wanted it done for free. And they said, well, we'll give you the bees. And said, you don't understand. You know, I'm going to be 20 feet up on a ladder and I'm going to spend the next 3 or 4 hours pulling bees out of your house. I'm not going to do that for a box of $150 box of bees. You know, it's something that, you know, you don't ask a plumber to come to your house for free and you don't ask an electrician to come for free. And it's the same thing with beekeepers. You know, it is going to cost you a little bit, but you know, if you think about it, how many people do you know have had bee problems? It's not very many. So for the few unfortunate ones that do have bee problems, we're probably the best option.
No, I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. As someone who has experienced your work and just what you offer and just how helpful and responsive you were, I'm glad that I reached out to you and paid you for your services. So, I guess, Ed, before we wrap up, let me give you a chance to, you know, shout out any of your social media or any ways that people can get in touch with you. You know, if you want me to at some point list your contact information, I can do that in my show notes and they'll see it whenever this episode goes out and be able reference back to you.
Yeah, that would be terrific. If you want to put my name and phone number out there, that would be great. Again, you know, the best option is if you have this kind of problem, just go to Facebook, search for beekeeping groups in the county. I belong to the Metro Atlanta Beekeepers Club, the Forsyth County Beekeepers Club, the Union Hill Beekeepers Club, and I'm going to become a member of the Cherokee Beekeepers Club too, Cherokee County Beekeepers. So, you know, there's a lot of people belong to several of these clubs, and you know, the Forsyth County Beekeepers Club is probably the most active and largest in Georgia now. They've got hundreds of members, and there's a lot of mentorship that goes on with that. They're really a good community of folks.
Awesome.
So if you're on North Fulton, Metro Atlanta Beekeepers or Forsyth County Beekeepers Club are probably the two biggest.
Okay. And then for the people who are listening nationally and across the world, just reach out to whatever resources you guys have available in your local area, your state, your county, your city, your country, and, you know, just let them know, hey, I've got bees, and I'm sure that someone like Ed will show up and go to work and help you get rid of your bee problem. So,
yep. All right. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for adding me to your thing here.
Oh, no problem, Ed. I appreciate you being a part of the conversation, man. I just want to thank Ed Parsons for stopping by and being a part of the conversation. You guys be sure to reach out to Ed if you need anything. He is in the Atlanta metro area, but I'm sure if you have honeybees and you need someone to help you answer a few questions, Ed would be more than happy to talk with you for a few moments and to get you what you need to know. Up next on Culture and Conversations, I just want you to keep in mind that we have our social media platforms. Reach out to us on Facebook, Culture and Conversations. Also on YouTube, Culture and Conversations. Also on Facebook, Culture and Conversations presents hashtag the group chat. And also, lastly, we're on Instagram as well, Culture and Conversations. Thank you guys again for being a part of the conversation. And I look forward to you guys hearing from me more frequently and more regularly. Peace.